Next presenter,
Helena
Bonville, okay, from the University of Texas School of Public Health, and she's presenting on a topic: tools to develop, document, and track systematic reviews and meta-analysis.
Thank you very much for being here today, and. And not only do we have a tool, we also have a protocol, so let me add that. I have no relationships to disclose. Before I go too much further, I need to acknowledge two people. First, Dr. Patricia Dolan-Mullen provided the impetus for the development of these tools by inviting a librarian to co-teach her systematic review course. And secondly, Margaret Anderson Foster was the librarian who had the foresight to recognize that there needed to be a better way to corral search strategies and results, and thus began the development of the tools and protocol you'll see during this presentation. I am going to cover how the SPH library got into the systematic review business, issues with reporting standards, and the tools and protocol that we employ. The UTSPH library has seen a rapid increase in the number of students and faculty requesting assistance with systematic reviews. Master's students are given the option of completing a systematic review for their culminating experience, and students in the Behavioral Sciences doctoral program, which is the largest at my institution, are required to complete a systematic review as part of their dissertation. Some of the other divisions strongly recommend their doctoral students do the same. Researchers at the School of Public Health and the UT School of Nursing, which is right next door to my building, are also completing more systematic reviews for grants as well as publications. The tools and the protocol that we've developed in the SPH library have been employed in more than 100 systematic reviews, as faculty and other students have discovered the effectiveness and ease of use of our tools and protocol. Word of mouth has resulted in SPH librarians being called upon ever more often to participate in reviews. Our role in the systematic review process is multifaceted. We first make certain that the review is unique so the student or researcher doesn't waste time on a redundant review. With students, I'm often the bearer of bad news. They typically think of the low-hanging fruit, but of course the low-hanging fruit has already been taken. If we discover that a review has been done, I will work with the student to come up with alternatives while sticking as closely as possible to the original topic, and of course the student has to go back to their advisor for approval. Once we get the systematic review topic developed and aims defined, then search strategies are developed for all databases. Lastly, based on reporting guidelines, we aid in capturing data that is used for writing the methodology and results section. For some of you, the idea of a librarian being so closely involved in the systematic review process may seem questionable or, you know, maybe even superfluous. How hard can it be to search PubMed or Google? However, the Cochrane Collaboration, the Institute of Medicine, and the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality all recommend having a librarian or information specialist on the systematic review team. The tools and protocol we've developed over the past 6 years utilize search filters, also known as hedges, RefWorks, and Microsoft Excel. Over the past 2 years or so, I've developed several study methodology search filters for several databases and interfaces, including filters for systematic reviews. The systematic review search filters are used to determine if the idea is unique. They're fairly complicated, as unfortunately authors often do not call their systematic reviews a systematic review. Please, if you're doing one, call it a systematic review. But I see all kinds of terms, which results in my search filters looking like this, which are not pretty. However, in order to capture all potential systematic reviews, I've come up with these search statements. Using my search filter, I can do a very broad search on a topic and then overlay my systematic review filter onto it to determine if there's been any done. So we review all of the hits that come out and see if any of them match with the student or researcher topic. And I'd much rather spend a few extra minutes up front than to work hours on a review only to find out that the topic has been taken. Once we have determined that the student or researcher does have a unique review, we begin the next steps of identifying all databases to search and developing search strategies, preparing RefWorks, and downloading and renaming the Excel workbook. In addition to the systematic review filter, I've also created filters for trials, qualitative studies, and observational studies. With the latter, again, we run into the issue with researchers not explicitly stating within the title or abstract that they've done a cross-sectional study, a case control, or whatever. So sometimes I'll test out those filters to see if it really works. With clinical trials and qualitative studies, we're pretty comfortable with the filter. Another strategy that I employ is to have a home database or a primary database in which I spend a great deal of time creating what I always call my perfect search. It may take several weeks of working on the search strategy with multiple consultations with the student or researcher. I rely very heavily on the expert's input because I'm an expert in creating database searches. I'm not a subject expert. So they help me build the vocabulary. And then once I've got my search, I can go ahead and create my searches for my other databases. It was important that any tools or protocols we developed and used enhanced our ability to track all elements needed for reporting results. Consequently, as the tools were developed and we established our protocol, we looked at existing reporting guidelines. In a systematic review by Sampson et al., the authors identified 18 elements in 11 reporting instruments. I selected 13 elements that should be reported in any systematic review as reflect search quality, give results of all searches as well as the final disposition of citations and articles found and reviewed, and allow for replication of any systematic review or meta-analysis. The first item is a statement as to who developed the search strategy. I would argue that a search done by a trained professional will be of a higher quality than one done by someone not trained in database searching. A trained librarian can also reduce the potential for publication bias, as someone who is trained should be familiar with a larger set of databases and will possibly recommend some that are not on the radar of the researcher. I don't want to read every item on the next few slides. But one item to note is that there's a statement that one of the elements I include is a statement of search concepts, not search terms. I feel it's preferable to refer to a broad search strategy by identifying concepts. And then the last item on this particular list, you've got to include your search statement somewhere. So to me, it's preferable to have a Word document or a text document, if you're publishing, that you can upload as online supplemental material. And then that way, if somebody wants to replicate your search strategy, they can easily grab it. Our students incorporate their search statements into the appendix of their thesis or dissertations. The Excel workbook has been designed specifically for systematic reviews. These are multiple worksheets to track results from database searches as well as items that are found through non-database means. Elements included in the workbook are those that should be reported. RefWorks is a citation management program similar to EndNotes and Reference Manager, except it lives entirely in the cloud, so it's completely online. The UTSPH Library began subscribing to RefWorks in 2002, and we've been extremely pleased with its flexibility, how easy it is to learn, and the level of support that we have from the company. It's easy to import citations from our online databases, and there is an automatic link to a search tool to locate online full text. And it's even possible to upload the PDFs of articles and attach them to individual citation records. It also allows us to create folders, which we use extensively in the systematic review process. So here's the protocol. I'm going to walk through the individual steps. There aren't a lot of steps in it, but the steps do tend to be very iterative. In the Excel workbook, this is the first step. As searches are done, then the researcher or student needs to record the date that the search is completed, the date range of the search strategy itself, and how many items are found. And then we also have as a default that English-only articles, because that's what our students tend to do. Below the database description area is an area for saving the search strategy itself. Instructions are included for each database on how to add the search so that it can be included in a manuscript easily. In the second step of the protocol, the items are imported into RefWorks, so we've got to prepare RefWorks also, and which is a matter of creating a new account, going into customization module to change some field names, and we have a few other things that we do. And then we create individual folders to hold citations that we found through each database searched, as well as items found through non-database sources such as bibliographies and citation tracking. We have 5 screening folders that we create to hold each citation once it's been screened, if it's an abstract or reviewed for eligibility, if it's an article full text. And then finally, we have 3 additional folders that we've created, background discussion and for next article. Background is for those items that, you know, may or may not be found through our database search process, but which are helpful for the introduction to the paper. The discussion folder helps the students think about the so what of their systematic review. They spend so much time in the upfront part that sometimes they forget about what the conclusions are. So, you know, I was trying to get them to think about the fact that they do have to discuss this. And then the for next article folder. Students will fall in love with a paper. They want to include it so badly, and it's just not appropriate as part of the case set. It's not appropriate for the systematic review itself. So we've got this place where they can put this, they can store the article, gives them emotional release, and allows them to move on. They can come back to it when they're done. They know it's there, but they can always come back to it. After each import, the third step is to check for duplicates, and I usually do the first couple of hundred with students or researchers so they get the hang of it. We have little tricks like checking for page numbers and that sort of thing, but you have to eyeball every single citation to ensure that it truly is a duplicate. Right now we're deleting all of our duplicates, although it would be easy just to capture them and put them into a duplicate folder if we felt that it was necessary. Back in the Excel workbook, to the right of the database description area is a holding spot to record duplicates. As duplicates are deleted, the number deleted on each page gets recorded, and then there's a formula that adds together the number of duplicates, and another formula subtracts them from the original number found so that we get a total number of unique items found in that search. In the fourth step, the student or a researcher is screening the citations in each of the database folders, and then the record is edited to indicate if the item is a maybe or a no. And when reviewing abstracts, there are no yeses. There's we're following the PRISMA flowchart, which I'll show later. Each no is assigned a code to indicate the reason for no. And then, you know, we have students and researchers, we want them to create a chart so that they're consistent in their coding. Each item is saved into the appropriate folder after screening, and then once all items have been screened, individual codes can be searched and the data recorded in the Excel workbook for inclusion in the results section. So this shows the section where they can record by database and by reason for no, but they've got the option of using this one, or I have another worksheet where they can record just for reason for no. The citations, the full text of the articles are retrieved in the fifth step, and they're all coming from the maybe folder. And then as they're reviewed for eligibility, the researcher or student would go back into RefWorks and indicate whether the item is going to be included or not. And then if it's not, it would be listed as no with a reason for no. And there's also a protocol so that if the reason for no is because it's not available, then that would be listed as the reason for no. And then the item gets saved into the appropriate folder once, and then once all of the full text have been reviewed, a search is performed on each code in RefWorks, and then the data gets recorded in the Excel workbook. And then this is what the simpler worksheet. So we can see that there's just a reason for no. It's not listed by database. And, you know, I try to include instructions throughout the worksheet so that people know what to do. All of the data feeds into the PRISMA flowchart. PRISMA stands for the Preferred Reporting Items for Systematic Reviews and Meta-Analyses. Some of you may have been familiar with its predecessor, QORM, the top left box. The top left box shows how many items were found, and then you can move through the flowchart. We can see how many duplicates were found. We also provide students with a template for reporting the methodology as well as their results. And then within the appendix, they can copy from the Excel workbook and paste into a table and get all of their search strategies. So in conclusion, we've had great success using the tools and protocols shown. We are careful about ensuring the systematic review proposal is unique. Once it's begun, all data is captured. Each step is thoroughly documented. RefWorks makes it easy to collaborate with others since it lives in the cloud. Additional screening fields can be added for a second or even third reviewer. And ultimately, the integrity of the methodology should be without question, as all searches and results are documented throughout the process. Please feel free to contact me with any questions, and my handouts are all freely available, as is the Excel workbook. Any questions? Yes. So the question was, in terms of duplicates, is it because of searching multiple databases, and then is there one database that the results tend to come from? My particular bias, and this is a searcher bias, is I'm an Ovid Medline searcher, so I tend to start with Ovid Medline, and then I create my parallel search strategy in PubMed, and then if it's a behavioral sciences, I go into PsycINFO. So PubMed becomes the citations that I keep, and then I'll move into PubMed, and then, yes, there tends to be a lot of overlap between PubMed and, I mean, of course, but there will be unique items, because the search strategies, while parallel, are not exactly the same, and then, of course, PubMed does have that a little more currency. So, but yeah, it's because as you're searching these databases, there's so much overlap, but ideally what we want to figure out is where are the unique items. Yes?
Your work on identifying systematic reviews and queries is actually very interesting, but so as an application to the metrics, mm-hmm. trying to measure impact scores for individual researchers. So I don't know if you thought about that, but often when you're measuring impact, you want to distinguish review papers from other papers. So if you're willing to make that available via Creative Commons license, I know the community would be interested in using that.
Okay. Yeah, and I've actually shared it with evidence-based practice listserv. They thought it was a little too complicated, and because people like to use the systematic review filter that's available in PubMed, but it doesn't capture everything, or they had their own little filters they built. I actually just revised mine because of the class that I co-teach with Dr. Mullen. There was a review that was used in the class where the author does not refer to a systematic review in any of the usual forms. So I ended up having to revise my search strategy to figure out, well, what's the best way to capture those kinds of items. So, but it's out there. So, but I'll add the Creative Commons to it.